You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. But on today's episode, episode 182 of Colombia Calling, we have a very special guest on the line from Cali. And of course, I'm slightly envious because I've always loved Cali. The weather, the people, the situation, the location, everything in Cali just always rings true. And of course, it was the first city that I got to know in Colombia all those years ago when I was taken out to the Pacific coast with WWF. But anyway, without talking more about me, my guest today is Luc Lapointe. He's Canadian. He's an expert in international finance. In fact, he teaches down there in Cali, but he is an expert in other issues as well and doing some very, very interesting work around, sort of financing and strategies for the post-conflict here in Colombia regarding marijuana, regarding coca. And if I've got that wrong, Luc, welcome on the show. Please correct me.
Great, Richard. Nice to hear from you and to have you here today. No, you're totally right. I'm in a Canadian or Quebecois now 3 years, or almost Caleño, as they would say here in Colombia. So I've been in Colombia since October 2013. So going on my fourth year now, and just got my resident card just a couple months ago.
Ah, it makes all the difference, doesn't it? The residence card, you feel a step up from your just on your temporary special visa.
Absolutely. Great. And as you mentioned, this is how the whole thing started here, teaching international finance at the TU University, at the Javeriana first, and then at the Libre University, Libre. And got to meet so many students and actually started planting new ideas on how you finance development in countries like Colombia, who are middle-income countries and technically should not depend on official aid and should start looking at new and private aid. So very interesting, and that led to, I guess, the second topic that you've mentioned, which is the whole marijuana or medical marijuana.
Yeah. And these are sensitive subjects here. This is Colombia. There is a justified reputation to this country, and it's unjustified in other areas as well. And unfortunately, I go to London and people say, what do you do? Where do you live? I say, Colombia, and they sort of tap their nose or make a reefer sign or something. There is that reputation. How do you fall into this about, the whole industry of medical marijuana? What is the situation right now in Colombia with regards to medical marijuana or marijuana in general?
Yeah, no, it's a very interesting context. I mean, even more than any other countries. And as you know, I think just a couple of days ago, Canada Justin Trudeau actually introduced a bill that will make recreational marijuana legal by July 1st, 2018. So we'll be celebrating Canada Day in a whole different context. Uh-huh. So that's what will be definitely interesting. And this is how the whole thing started. I mean, going back to Canada, two Christmas ago, in a meeting with some of my friends who are running businesses in Canada. Uh-huh. And, started to mention that Colombia is actually looking at this. I mean, the bill was introduced by Galan, uh-huh, changing a no law that allowed some kind of growing of marijuana in Colombia for medical, mostly for research purposes.
Right.
But wasn't widely used. So, I mean, this is how the whole thing started. So, very interesting context. I think it's interesting in the sense that Galan's law, and I think it probably still is haunting Colombia in a certain sense, where right now, I mean, the new legislation or the new decreto that just came out a couple of weeks ago is actually will force big businesses, and big businesses still hasn't been defined what is big businesses. Mm-hmm. But basically, I think the businesses will be forced to buy 10% of their total production from the small farmers, from the campesinos. Uh-huh. And I think the concept behind it make sense in a way that I think the country is trying to go from, you know, drugs for war and talking about drugs for peace now. You know, how do we use marijuana to change the landscape and you know, create legal markets for here in Colombia, but also for export markets. I mean, Colombia having the second best biodiversity in the world and 12 hours light all year, so it's got all the right conditions. But at the same time, I think the government always come up with great ideas when it comes to laws like marijuana. But again, I like to use in my classes, I use a lot of this. I use a theory of change is when you try to create something, you have to look at the impact or some of the challenges that you will face. And I think the first one is again, going back to the campesino, was I find I'm lucky anyway to have been invited by some of these campesinos to go up in what they call Corinto, Toribio, all that part of the world in Colombia, which about an hour and a half from Cali.
Yeah.
Where I mean, there's up to 3,000, 5,000 farmers growing illegally. We've done a little bit of a research showing that this is actually generating $5 billion for the organized crime in Colombia. Huh. So saying to the government, I mean, unless you rush things, unless you do something tomorrow or as quickly as possible, the organized crime is making a lot of money, $5 billion a year just from these small campesinos.
And just in these areas, Toribio, Corinto, and all of that area around there.
Exactly, yeah. It's been interesting. I mean, I met with the mayors of that region as well to have some discussion. We've had some discussion with some of the indigenous people from that region as well, some of the cabildo or the governors, right?
Yeah.
And trying to think, you know, what is their perception about marijuana? So we know from the CRIC, one organization of Aboriginal people, they're indigenous.
Yeah.
They don't want to know anything with marijuana, even though right now, I mean, you drive there and it's all over the place.
Right.
It's just phenomenal. I mean, it's not, they're not hiding it like, you know, the people used to do in Canada and the U.S. It's open field, and at night this mountain just lights up like a Christmas tree, right?
Yeah.
But what we found interesting is that, I mean, the government hasn't done much on the side of you know, how do we start changing that mentality around, you know, what do we think about marijuana in Colombia? And I think, you know, you speak to the mayors and you speak to the campesinos and say, well, we have the best marijuana in the world. And I think maybe to smoke it, maybe it's a good one, right? I wouldn't know much about this.
No, I know nothing.
the other side, I think it's when you're looking at medical purposes, right? At the end of the day, is this bill to actually help campesinos get into the sector? If that's the end purpose of this bill, then, you know, what is the government doing in helping finance the change, right? Over from growing in soil to growing hydroponics, right?
It's strange. I was going to interrupt you just quickly, but don't lose your train of thought there. It's strange if the government doesn't get fully involved, then we've created a full-on gray area between legal and illegal.
That's right, and I think it's creating a lot of a false expectation. So, I mean, every time we go there, we're there just a couple of weeks again, meeting with some of their campesinos that are interested. And I think, you know, the knowledge is still there that, you know, we'll keep growing in the soil and, you know, there'll still be chicken and cows, you know, going around, and we'll have coffee mixed with this or platano.
Yeah.
So you're just trying to think at the end of the day, if you're really trying to get a product down to, you know, to help a patient with, you know, some chronic pains or some kind of pathology, right? Mm. I mean, you would want that product to be grown in a laboratory, right?
Yeah.
You know, where there's no contaminants. And if you look at Canada, for me, it's still probably the country where they have the most rigid regulations around the growing of marijuana for medical purposes, as I think it's testing for about 300 contaminants or type of pesticide that could be used to make sure that it's not in the product. And then I guess that's the end goal right now, is to get a good product for the patient. And so this hasn't taken place in Colombia yet for the government to say, okay, well, we will make a list like they do in Canada, and it says, well, if you want to use something, these are the only products we will allow in the farming of marijuana for medical purposes, right?
So how, I mean, at the moment, I suppose people are using all sorts of toxins and various other things to grow the marijuana as it is in Colombia.
Exactly. I mean, you go there and people are just throwing whatever products that they need to actually make this grow. And sometimes they have problem with pest or hungus or fungus. And again, they'll throw anything at the product. And I think it's interesting to put things in context again, where, I mean, in Canada, as I said, the laws are extremely strict, and there's a good overseeing by the government. And the strategy in Canada is much more different than many other places in the world, where Canada says, well, I have not that many businesses, instead of having a lot of businesses. So if you compare Canada with 36 million people and California with more or less the same population, 36 million, there's 36 grower in Canada, or legal grower.
Right.
And in California, you have 3,000.
Yeah, and how much do they test for in the U.S.? What's the difference? I mean, because you say Canada tests for X number, but the U.S., how much do they test for in contaminants?
They don't.
Yeah, so it sounds like a perfect market for the Colombian product that is the U.S.
That's right. It's up to the consumers to actually request if tests were done on the product. So it's kind of it's a weird way where the power is in the hand of the consumer. Maybe it's a good strategy as well, but I think it's hard when you're trying to destigmatize marijuana.
Right.
And you can compare it to a Dolex here in Colombia or Advil, right? It doesn't matter where you buy that Advil, it's still, it will always give you 400 grams of whatever you're taking, right? Doesn't matter if you buy it in Cali or in South Africa, right? Mm-hmm. But it's the same product. And marijuana doesn't do this when you grow in the soil, as it, the soil has more nutrients from one part to the other part. It gets more light, less light, so the conditions have to be. So that, I think there's a big gap there from the government. And we met, for example, with some of the financial institution that we thought the government would actually be helping. It says, if the campesino wants to get into the game, then they'll have to grow under a greenhouse. They'll have to use new techniques. I mean, this takes time.
And money.
And money, exactly, yeah. And we can't imagine, or I can't imagine any banks or anybody lending to these campesinos, not because they don't know what they're doing, but it's just a question of risk, right?
Right. But then tell me one thing quickly then. If there, you have to do it on all these, let's say, greenhouses and certain things, and there's all this money that's required, surely growing the products illegally is going to be far more, beneficial economically.
Well, yes, I know, it's interesting because the good things when things are illegal is that the risk is much higher than when it's legal, right?
Sure.
So right now the buyers are willing to pay more for the product because there is a risk factor in growing it, and there is a risk factor in distributing.
Yes.
In the distribution of the product. So they're willing to pay much more for the product.
I think
it's right now, the last time I was there, it's about 120,000 pesos per pound.
Wow. That's high, isn't it? As we wind down this first segment, though, and I know that my listeners will be thinking about this, it's like, what is the actual situation surrounding the legality of marijuana in Colombia at the moment? How many can people grow legally?
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that. Thanks for raising this one, because I think it's Colombia's probably the first country in the world that has legalized recreational marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, you can grow 20 plants on your own, which means that you would have to smoke about 50 joints a day to actually consume all that marijuana that you would be growing with 20 plants. And you can actually have 1 kilo of seeds, which is just phenomenal.
It's a huge amount.
It's a huge amount of marijuana, and you'd have to be spent your whole day smoking to actually use all that marijuana.
So you'd be smoking it but not growing it, because you wouldn't have you'd be too out of it to grow it. It's very strange. I find this incredibly strange. It seems like, again, it's this stigma in Colombia, of course. And if I talk, for example, to my wife's extended family and sort of mention marijuana, I do not participate in anything. I do not partake in my vice is probably the worst of all, and it's alcohol. But at the same time, you know, I did not participate, but I sort of, okay, people smoke a joint here and there, but they'll look at me as if I'm talking about the Antichrist. I mean, they'll look at me and say, well, you know, the gateway drug, it's this, then they'll be, you'll be in the Bronx before you know it, that sort of thing. And I mean, this is what you're up against. And I think this is something that we'll need to address in this next segment of the show, because you're basically trying to, you know, completely change an attitude towards what is believed by many to be something that's not just marijuana, of course, the coca, but, and we'll talk about that too, but, you know, an extension of the conflict, and of course, very key to the conflict here and key to funding the illegal groups and funding whomever. It's a really tough one to get involved in.
No, absolutely. And it's definitely an interesting context. I mean, the one that Colombia offers, but I think, you know, if the government would actually step back and then think a little bit about this, I mean, they could turn this into a global model where there is finance and there is education and there is a good industry that could be built because you've got the perfect weather, but you're competing with companies that have a lot of money. And if you're looking at Canada, for example, I mean, to grow, I mean, at minus 50 degree, right?
Horrible.
Which is phenomenal. Extremely costly, right? To live in the winter in Canada or anywhere up north.
Yeah.
But I mean, they can still do it for about 1,500 pesos a gram, which is extremely.
Yeah.
So this is the market that you'll have to compete with, right? Where it's extremely organized, it's precise agriculture of precision agriculture in the way that it's grown, right?
Oh, excellent. Well, thank you. Thank you. Oh, this is so interesting. So we're going to take a short break and we'll be back and we'll talk further and we'll delve into the issue of coca as well and what you're doing with that. So we're talking to Luc Lapointe, who's in Cali at the moment. We're here in Bogota. This is episode 182. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Thank you for listening. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I am Richard McCall, and we're back on the phone with Luc Lapointe in Cali, and we're here in Bogota. And we're talking about the medicinal marijuana market here, well, the possibilities for Colombia and what they might be up against, the farmers and so on and so forth. Shortly, we'll move on to coca, because, of course, it's an even more sensitive subject and something that should be discussed. It's an issue that needs to be addressed in this, let's say, inverted commas, post-conflict Colombia that we are now experiencing. But before we move on to that, there are other countries, aren't there, Luca, that do have sort of, let's say, an industry for medicinal marijuana. I believe Jamaica is one of those. You've got some statistics, I think.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting because I think it speaks well to what's happening in Colombia, what's coming in Colombia, as the law is just about to be approved, that, you know, it will allow for anybody to apply. The government was quite open about this, that there's not going to be any limits like Canada. So anybody that can afford the license will be able to apply, and there's no rules, right? I mean, good luck, come up with some products. But I think it's nice, it's interesting to put the perspective of what happened or what is currently happening in Jamaica, where there are right now, I think as of the latest statistic, 188,000 farmers, illegal farmers, and illegal in the sense that in Jamaica it's more accepted than probably any other places in the world. I think we've got the whole Bob Marley's years of remembering what Jamaica is all about, or part of what Jamaica is all about. But what's interesting in Jamaica is that similar to Colombia, they said, well, let's get the small farmers to come into the ball game so they can actually start growing legally and they can actually start putting some products out. And as of now, right now, only 23 farmers applied out of the 188,000 farmers.
Huh.
There's only 23 applied for license. So what will all these other 187,000 farmers will do right now? I mean, still work with illegally, and this is, you know, something that could happen here in Colombia, right? Unless it's affordable, then the government can actually support them.
It's a very interesting situation. I find it very complex. I mean, we kind of think that everything might fall into place, that it's, an able business. But like you say, the Jamaica model is something that would have to be viewed very carefully to see how best to pursue an industry of this nature.
Absolutely. And I think an interesting thing thing is, I think it, at the end of the day, I think it's the cost of applying for license, and actually the cost actually, have the installation, the equipment, or the know-how to come up with a good product and actually get it safely to a patient. I guess that's the end objective here, that is to help patients with, some with conditions that may need some of the product as an alternative treatment to opioids or all kind of other things that are probably causing more damage, right?
Right.
But I think one little component I think that's interesting, I mean, if you start looking at, at the government's role, and I'm not going to name the bank, but, actually a couple months ago in Bogota, I actually did a visit to some of the banks, financial institutions here in Colombia, or the ones that are more closer to agriculture, and I won't name which bank it is. But anyway, met with them, and it's, basically asking them, where are you on this subject, right? Is the government talking to you about, providing financing to some of these small farmers, and basically, I mean, in the eyes were just, this person just looked at me like I was coming from another planet, saying no, I mean the institutional risk for us to do this would be, we can't even think about it. So this kind of strange in the way that the government is going about this, and I think there's great opportunities for the small campesinos if they work together, and if they understand this is costly in the first few years, are extremely costly, but there's benefit down the road if it's well done, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting situation. I can see the benefits down the road. I keep coming back to this, the stigma, and you said I can imagine the bank managers are just eyes, as wide as saucers, with you discussing this. What's this gringo thinking? But of course, it's something that will over, I think, a new generation coming through, we'll have to acknowledge this change. It's a global change. It's not just Colombia. Mm-hmm. It's a global change. Perhaps Colombia needs a little more time, but the marijuana plant, the coca plant, which we'll get into right away, really, they're not going away. They're not going away. It's not something you can eradicate here in Colombia. I mean, they grow, they are weeds, really, and they're so durable. I mean, it's going to have to be considered. And I think there's something, it's a socializing a different thought process around marijuana and around coca. And of course, I know that, if we talk about coca and someone says, you legalize this, you legalize that, you're opening the door to so many ills. And I know this. And they'll immediately say, would you allow your son to consume coca? And I'd probably say, my thing would be no. But at the same time, surely I should be educating him. And then therefore, on the strength of that, hopefully he's not getting involved in these things. But this is the arguments I'm sure you're facing on every level, at every turn. I can't even imagine. I know there's sort of, I'm sure that there are private, let's say private investors, and there are strategies for this, but it's got to be so hard. I don't know how you keep up, working on a field like this.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting, and I think it's a great challenge. And, looking at what's happening with the post-conflict or the peace consolidation process and the lack of financing that the government is faced with. I mean, with so many, I think it's the country that has the most displaced population in the world, 14 to 18%. And there's a good study from Harvard University showing that, I mean, there's no way that this government or the next one can actually afford to the promises that they made to the victims of the conflict. So you're looking at this as probably a great opportunity, a great sector. I mean, marijuana is not native to Colombia. I think it appeared like many places in the world around the 60s, right, or 70s, and it was more from the, it appeared more from in the Atlantic or Caribbean Sea from around Santa Marta, and made its way down here in the valley where the conditions are just, perfect for this product to grow here. And I mean, the lights, the humidity, everything that, it's not so hot, right? So it lends perfectly to this. And I think you've opened a door there when you've mentioned coca. Last year. And before the election, start to speak with some people in the Senate in Washington, the committee working on drugs, and think, is there an opening there to actually start talking about this, knowing it's not like marijuana, it's not going to be overnight. And I think the audience or people have to make a difference between coca and cocaine. Coca is one thing, where the cocaine is coming from. I mean, but the plant has many other benefits, right? And I think we all go back to you know, if you look at the history of that leave, it's probably the only one that received the benediction from the Pope as, you know, a plant that could cure and that could offer many benefit. Mm. And the other one, you know, there's nothing more American than Coca-Cola. And right now, you know, to see the Americans here, or you know, the U.S., most of all, actually here in Colombia, trying to eradicate that plant, but it's still being used in large quantity by Coca-Cola. So they purchase their coca leaves from Peru and bring it to New Jersey, I believe, and where it's, the cocaine is extracted from the product, but they use the rest of the plant in Coca-Cola.
And then the extracted cocaine goes to the pharmaceutical companies?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's the story behind it, but who knows, right? Yeah. I think there's an interesting movie about the product itself. I mean, so many things that comes, I think there's so many stories that came with Pablo Escobar and all kind of other things. But, I mean, you look at other things that have been done with coca, and you've got Red Bull using it right now, and you've got companies in Holland. Mm. Actually doing a liquor out of it, or some kind of a gin, a high quality gin called Coca Blue, and it's selling for, you know, close to $400 a bottle. So there is a market, right? I mean, if you start looking at the plant itself, as it grows here, it's native or somewhat native to Colombia, mostly in the for the indigenous people, they will still get the right, or they still by law have the right to 50 plants per person in reservation. Reserves. So it's interesting, but you look at the challenge that the government is facing, where right now, I mean, some of the campesinos that we're meeting, are growing both coca and marijuana, mm-hmm. to supplement the incomes. And they're being offered by the government, I mean, 36 million pesos, which is not a lot of money over 3 years, right? Mm. But right now, I mean, right beside them after the government leaves, I mean, the organized crime or the Mexican cartel are here and offering 100 million pesos to keep growing. So,
that's always the issue. It's going to be the economics behind it. I have one coca plant in my garden in Mompós, and it's the only plant that survived everything. The last eight and a half years, we've dropped cement on it, we've dropped venom on it, we've dropped paint on it, and this thing keeps coming back and coming back stronger. It gives you an idea of how resilient it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's being used mostly by, you know, I guess now in Peru, in Bolivia, where I've spent a lot of time in Bolivia, this is something you always had a bag of coca leaves on your desk, right? I mean, this is a natural to chewing gum over there in Bolivia.
Yeah.
And it's not creating a dependency. I mean, you can chew all the leaves. It'll probably get your it'll do more damage to your teeth than it'll do to your health. But there's all kind of good things that could be done. I mean, here they make toothpaste out of it, as it, you know, kinds of numbs your gums. Mm-hmm. So it allows for this. I mean, they actually transform it in some kind of a flour, so they actually make breads and cookies. Mm-hmm. And highly nutritive. You know, probably one of the plant that has the highest source of calcium. So there's all kind of benefits. I think it's hard not to look at both of them at the same time. The marijuana is definitely the easiest one right now, even with all the stigma attached from it. And the stigma is not only from Joe Sixpack or anybody in the street, but also from the medical field, right? From doctors.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, I think there's a lot. You can go on the internet right now and see so many stories about kids with epilepsy. Mm-hmm. He managed to control their tremors, right?
Yeah.
But here in Colombia, when you speak to a neurolog about, you know, will they be looking at this as a, you know, an alternative treatment, everything else that they do, and right now they say no. So there's just so much work to be done with the medical side of the equation. I mean, there's the campesinos, but eventually the market, as it's, I mean, you, there's not a place in Colombia where you cannot find some of these drops, right? Tinctures that people make with marijuana, and sometimes these pomadas or these creams mixed with coca and marijuana.
Yeah.
I mean, you still don't know if what's in it is really what they're saying is in the products. But anyway, I've used it, I play a lot of soccer. So yeah. When I get injuries, I've used it for pain, and it seems to be working. Maybe it's a placebo, but it seems to be working.
The placebo effect.
Exactly.
But tell me, I mean, you know, in a perfect world, then, I mean, what you're doing, you're trying to change let's say, not just the image that these crops have, but also change the politics in Colombia. I mean, without, I guess, U.S. backing, I have to bring that in there. Is this really going to happen? I mean, we've got elections next year. We don't know who's going to get in. Who's going to be a hardliner or someone less hardline here in Colombia? I just see the complexities piling up.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because, I mean, the other one, when I was in Bolivia, the only one that's actually fighting, or I guess taking this as a fight, is Evo Morales.
Yeah. Right?
With, once in a while showing up at the UN with one coca leaf and saying, well, this is not drugs, it's coca, and it's all kind of benefits, and we've used it for many years. But I think it'll take more than one Evo Morales to start changing the world. And I've had, during just prior to the OnGas event last year, right, there was all the whole discussion around, do we change how marijuana is classified? How do we start looking at coca or all kind of other drugs, that are out there? Mm. And I think it was interesting. I've been speaking with the Brookings Institute in the U.S. And I said, why don't we start from the U.S. and why don't we start with some of these think tank in the U.S. to start changing that conversation about the plant? I mean, it's a great plant. I think it's too bad that it's been used for cocaine, and people says, well, we have to blame the market, which is the U.S.
Mm.
For consuming it. So deal, that's normally the answer from governments here. Mm-hmm. You guys deal with your market, and then if the demand is not there, then these guys will go out of business.
Right.
So it's an interesting context, and I think the battle has to be taken on all front. I think from the government here to start looking at, yes, we have a problem. Is it possible to actually eradicate all of this plant? I mean, it's grown by incredible amount over the past few years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, how do we get the campesinos to start looking at the government? How do we maybe do some pilot projects and start looking at legal farming of this product?
Right.
In the way that, how do we innovate? How do we integrate, as the indigenous do it already here? I mean, they mix coca with marijuana, which is, it's kind of weird because, marijuana has this relaxing effect and coca is the opposite. So the plants are kind of antagonist, right? So it's kind of weird that they mix it, but it seems to be working.
Yeah, but then a question there, you raised something, is that we need to think innovatively and so on. Is Colombia in a position to think innovatively around this? I mean, have we seen other, have we seen the politicians thinking outside of the box towards these products?
Well, in Colombia, not so much. Unfortunately, I think this is probably the problem that's lying behind or in front of this law right now, which will come out. And I think the new decreto came out on the 10th of April,
mm-hmm.
which actually starts putting in place the regulation. How do we apply? Who can apply? And for what can you apply? And now I think it's the government is saying 2 months before the window for application comes out, so it'll allow for anybody to apply. And right now, I think what they're working on right now is mostly the cost. What would be the cost for each of these licenses? And that's going to be the big game changer as far as how do we get the campesinos? But if we get the campesinos, who will finance them? We know the government doesn't have money, and their agricultural bank don't seem to have the money to actually do this or the interest to do it right now.
Yeah,
as it's highly, highly risky, right?
So it feels to me, though, if unless they do start thinking outside the box, I mean, with the process of several years, unless they do start thinking outside the box, this is a potential market that Colombia could really miss out on. Other countries, let's say Bolivia, Peru, could be there ahead of Colombia.
Absolutely. And there was an event last August in Popayan where you had the whole gamut of people using coca, if we talk about coca again, from the indigenous people, which, for most of them anyway, it's more of a traditional use, more spiritual, it's part of their living. And so they're not looking for any commercial use of the plant. But some of them, so they're saying, if we approve it, then as far as we're concerned, us, the indigenous people, this should not be a commercial product. But on the other end, if you want to get the scale, then you have to look at commercial use of the product, a little bit like marijuana, right? I mean, you can use it for your own purposes, but how do we use this, you know, in other contexts, in the health context, in this case, where they've demonstrated. There's more study that's being taking place right now, but showing that there's an impact, right? That there's an effect, and some for some patients, it's actually working. But there's a whole bunch of benefit and industry that comes with it, not only in transforming it, but everything else that could be mixed in with the marijuana, the final product.
So, I mean, talking to you as a, let's say, you know, a financial expert, international finance, etc. I mean, in an ideal world, How will this pan out? That you'll get private investment and that will encourage governments to change their politics towards it, opening up a market in Colombia?
Well, I think the investment are here. I think it's phenomenal how many companies are here right now looking at Colombia. But I think what could be or some of the things that could happen very, very quickly that will make Colombia uncompetitive is the extra tax that the government is starting to lay on top of what this final product will be. So they're talking about a 16% tax on the production of marijuana, which is, you know, changes the way things are being done in other countries, where it's more a tax on the patient or a tax on sales, right? And at the same time, I mean, Colombia has the problem of the need for high security. I mean, you can have security in Canada or the U.S. with cameras and you know, one security guard, but in Colombia, I mean, the transportation, everything is just so much more costly. So, if you look at the cost that Canada has managed to control when it comes to growing the product, then Colombia may walk themselves out of a market. I mean, first of all, by forcing companies to buy by the campesinos, which is a great concept, a great idea, but who's going to finance it, right? Who's going to finance them? And I mean, I'm sure you've been to some of those regions like Toribio and Corinto. And, you know, you go up that mountain and there's only one road in and there's only one road out, right? So, and it's not that easy, and there's still extortion. I mean, sure, some of the FARC paramilitaries have left the region, but now other groups have come in, and they, you know, if you want to take that product down the mountain, you'll have to pay extortion.
This is true. So, I mean, there'll be sort of taxes, formal and informal, anywhere as you look. But what I'm feeling then, you know, because what I'm feeling is that it's all about a messaging on this product and how to get this message across to the people. And then hopefully the politicians will change their tune. But I imagine that Congress here is against any sort of change. I mean, you've talked about Galán, but overall, I imagine the conservative side would be very outspoken.
No, absolutely. I mean, but for the marijuana, I think right now, I mean, that one has made its way through the House and or through the Congress. And one of the things that we've raised, some of the concern that we've raised with the government, is most countries around the world allow for patients to grow on their own. But I mean, up to 6 plants, which I think is more than enough for a patient, unless, you know, you spent the whole 24 hours stoned or high. I mean, it's just phenomenal, but at least it comes with conditions. I mean, if you grow marijuana in your house in the U.S. or in Canada, you actually need a separate room. It needs to be locked so kids don't have access to the room. And there's all kind of controls that you need to put in place, and they're being inspected. And you need a license so the police actually knows if your neighbor calls. And this is, well, there's some weird activities at the house where Luke lives, where a lot of people are coming in, right? So. So again, unless these controls are put in place, and then talking to the governments, they said we need to act on these things right now before the. I mean, it'll be very easy for organized crime to organize people to grow 20 plants and start, you know, catering to local markets, right?
Yeah.
At a very low cost. So unless the government actually start forcing people and say, okay, well, yes, I mean, in the court says you can actually grow, but maybe 20 plants is a little bit too much. And if you do grow at home, maybe you should have a locked room. And, you know, if you grow, how do we know you're not putting, products that may harm you more than they will help you, right? So we're telling the government, I mean, this is time to do it. And now, I mean, some of the bureaucrats are saying, well, no, wait for the next government. I mean, it's too late for this one. But I think, the earlier we start lobbying the government to start looking at this, that's, you know, a great potential, as as it does everywhere in the world. And there's a big challenge. Look at Jamaica, a country that's probably more open to marijuana than any other places in the world. But I mean, once again, I mean, the small producers has little opportunities to go into the to get into the market. As you know, it's extremely costly for license, extremely costly to make the change. So I think we need our government to be a little bit more creative and says, well, we'll invite some of our, a little bit like we do with blended finance, right? Is how do we start giving guarantees to investors? Well, we'll, I mean, you come in with the money, we'll provide guarantees, and let's start changing the culture, and let's start using these new technologies, these new ways of growing products, so we can apply it to tomato or all kind of other crops, right?
I can see the banner now and the Drugs for Peace.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because last year we had an event at the UN with Impact 2030, and you know, started talking about people about, you know, drugs for peace instead of drugs for war, and it really resonates well with people. So, my God, I mean, tell me more. How can I get involved? So we're I can't really talk about that one, but we're looking at a strategy to actually start, you know, in Colombia but also around the world. How do we get people to actually start, you know, maybe using crowdfunding, for example. To start getting some money to those campesinos, support them to make that change. And it's, you know, it's, as we always tell them as well, the campesinos, I mean, there's not a market right now in the world that could absorb all of the marijuana being grown in Colombia for legal market, right, for medical markets. So eventually some of them will have to grow something else. And this is the problem. I think people have to be creative, and some of the, you know, I think right now people are using calendula, for example. Marigold, right, to actually mix it with marijuana, moringa, I mean, it's all kind of other benefit, other crops that could be used and mixed with marijuana. And Colombia has the perfect weather and the second best biodiversity in the world.
It's amazing. I think we don't, unfortunately, look, we don't have any more time. And this is a subject I think we could talk for hours and hours on, and something that's obviously close to your heart, because I mean, I don't know how many hours of the day you spend on these and organizing meetings, which I imagine are cancelled, rearranged, and then repositioned, and so on and so forth, as are meetings here in Colombia. It's fascinating. But as we move, I mean, in this sort of, let's say, in a global acceptance and a more, maybe a liberal, you know, attitude towards legalization, although current government in the US, of course, will not adhere to any of that. And depending on what happens in 2018 here in Colombia, I mean, if we get a Vargas Lleras or an Ordóñez in, then all your hard work is going to go up in flames, I think, up in smoke, a pun on the old Cheech and Chong movies there. I mean, it's really fascinating to talk, you know, to talk about this and to hear about it. And if you could just tell, maybe share with the listeners a little bit, just ending here, what kind of websites can they look at to find any more information about these subjects?
Well, I think the best one right now is definitely the Minister of Health, the Ministry of Health, and we can find some information. There is a an association that has been formed in Colombia as well, the Association of Cannabis Growers. Who's coming together now? You've got CoCannabis. It's another interesting website. So these are small campesinos, small farmers that are coming together, and are starting to collaborate. I think they don't understand all well the challenges that are coming ahead. But at least, you know, they're putting their heart at it, and hopefully we'll find a way to integrate them into the system, because I think it has a lot to offer. A lot of challenge, but you know, if there's anything that could be done, I think it could be done here in Colombia, even though it's challenging. But Colombia is a great country. Yeah. I miss Canada, but I don't miss the snow or the cold anyway.
Yeah, no,
and,
I can believe it.
Working here is challenging, but it's definitely worth it of all the thing I've done.
Excellent.
In the past.
Well, that's a very positive note to end on. So let me say thank you to Luc Lapointe, international finance expert teaching down there in Cali at the universities. Thank you so much for your time and your insights. And I hopefully down the line, maybe in a few months' time, you'll have some good news for us and we'll get you back on the show. So
sounds great. Thanks again, Richard. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, thank you. This has been episode 182. I've been Richard McCall on Columbia Calling. I know that you've enjoyed the show, those of you out there. Thank you so much for your kind comments regarding the last show, with my visit to the FARC, Coffee with the FARC. Of course, tune in if you haven't already listened to it. And we'll be back next week with a further show, episode 183, with someone else interesting talking about Colombia. So thank you again. Bye-bye.